Your line just went down. Production stopped. A supervisor wants answers. And someone's digging through a binder for the maintenance history. Every one of those minutes costs money. And most of the time, that breakdown could have been prevented. That's where MaintainX comes in. MaintainX catches the failure before it happens. Preventative maintenance plans on every key asset to improve reliability. Work orders assigned and tracked right from your phone. Everyone from the floor to the front office is in the loop. Companies on MaintainX have cut unplanned downtime by over 30% and saved thousands on parts and labor every year. See what MaintainX can do for your operation. Try MaintainX free at MaintainX.com, an Autodesk company.
I've always dreamed of being able to order my coffee in Italian like a local, instead of just pointing at the menu and hoping for the best. There's something about speaking another language with real confidence that opens up a whole new world of experiences. That's why I'm so excited about Rosetta Stone Sapphire. It's their biggest launch in over a decade. It takes that research-backed method we all know and trust and adds fresh, cutting-edge features that make it easier than ever to go from knowing a few phrases to speaking naturally about the topics you actually care about. What I love is that you aren't just memorizing vocabulary lists. You learn entirely in your new language through visuals and audio, just like you did as a kid. One of my favorite new features is chat missions. It turns conversation practice into a game, putting you in real-world scenarios, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions, and giving you missions to complete. You get real-time feedback along the way, so you build that confidence before you ever have to use your skills in the real world. If you want to take your language skills to the next level, don't wait to try Rosetta Stone Sapphire. Listeners of this podcast can get 20% off their Rosetta Stone Sapphire subscription when they sign up today. This gets you access to Rosetta Stone Sapphire in 25 languages. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10 to redeem your 20% off. That's rosettastone.com/rs10.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ever Google a money question and end up 12 tabs deep with 12 different answers? This podcast is your shortcut back to clarity. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast breaks down financial decisions with a team of trusted journalists. They explain the why behind decisions like investing, home buying, and choosing credit cards with clear, research-backed insights. No jargon, no misinformation. Make your next financial move with confidence. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Basketball, a game of giants. And there's number 99, George Mikan, one of the greatest.
Perhaps the most complete player the game has ever seen. The Lakers captain, Elgin Baylor.
2 seconds, 1 second. West throws it up. Jerry West made it from the other side of the mid-court stripe.
Ford sends it to Kareem. Sky hook up and good. Lakers win.
Magic down the middle, just what I thought. A hook shot at 12. Good!
Shaquille, fadeaway.
Giants for the win.
Bang!
James puts up the three.
Oh, it's good.
Doncic on the drive. Step back. Puts it up. Puts it in. With 5 tenths of a second remaining.
What's up, Laker fans? You're listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And as news continues to trickle in about the Buss family quarrel and Mark Walter's financial and legal issues and just the details of the sale and all of that, today we entertain the question of how much does this impact the on-court product and sort of the short to medium-term vision of the Lakers? D, there's been so much going on, and we'll get into some of it. You know, we got some reporting that Mark Walter was trying to get out of the Spectrum deal for both the Dodgers and the Lakers in exchange for a certain lump sum payment. And I know you did some writing recently where the crux of it was like, thank God we got out of the Mark Walter business while we still could. But as the Lakers are about to embark for Slovenia for Camp Luka, I pose that question to you. There's been some reporting around the team that's like, hey, it's kind of business as usual on the court. And all of this is sort of existing at a level that doesn't really hit the players and the team and all of that. And so I wanted to parse that out with you. What's your view on that whole idea?
This is all also within the context of the Lakers really gearing up for this season being an important season and this offseason being one that they were sort of zeroing in on as a way to transition the team and transition the roster. And we saw exactly that. it would have been interesting if all of this stuff would have happened on June 20th instead of July 20th. Everyone's hair been on fire.
Interesting is certainly a word for it. That is panic-inducing, just the thought of it.
But the Lakers were able to execute their offseason. Now, I made a crack at the end of yesterday's pod about the Jonathan Kuminga stuff, and you chimed in how those were much simpler times of Jonathan Kuminga watch date. And the team building, I suppose, is still ongoing. You talked about the trip to Slovenia. That's a part of team building as well. That's the internal part, the chemistry part, the let's get to know each other because we're a brand new group part. But I would also just say again that the Lakers have more guaranteed players on their roster now than what they could actually go into the regular season with 16 players under contract and only 15 available for the regular roster. So off-season machinations are not over yet by any means. Now, this could still go on all the way up into training camp when they have to make their final cuts or whatever. So this can still go on.
Do you think that this impacts the Kuminga situation or just player acquisition stuff in general?
I don't think it impacts that stuff at all, honestly. I would say different if there was sort of reporting about Rob Pelinka's job or people linking things to Iger and Kushner having their affinity for GMY or, right? Like, you know how there was that Chris Paul connection to Bob Iger and whether or not Paul would be brought on? I think one of the things that we're seeing now, and this is what we saw with the Walter acquisition, is that when the sale to Mark Walter was announced, that was June. The sale was not officially consummated until October. And that was for an internal owner, someone who already had partial ownership of the team. He already had a minority stake. So the transfer of power, and this is a whole side topic that goes back to our discussion about Adam Silver's NBA and the ownership stuff that you highlighted, but the idea that Walter was sort of fast-tracked in the way that he was probably ended up being wrong based off of like all of the investigation and ongoing issues that he was actually going through and the reporting around that broke a full month before he was actually approved. But I would have more sort of concern about the team building aspect in the present, like the right now, being impacted if I actually thought Iger and Kushner were moving for something very quickly, or if their ownership was taking over now and it was already approved, but it's not. We know Kushner still needs to divest his minority stake in the Miami Heat, for example. And then we also know that the Board of Governors is going to need to meet at some point in order to approve. We haven't heard any sort of future date about when that next Board of Governors meeting actually is going to happen, where this would be put to a vote and it could be approved formally. And so we're months out, it feels like, from the deal being finalized, acquiring Walter's stake, not anything related to the Bus family stuff. So to me, Pete, I think it actually is business as usual for the short-term team building, who are the players going to be on the team, that there's still moves to make within that, but I don't think Iger and Kushner are going to have any real, like, oh, we're holding this up, or this is a problem, and so you guys are sort of frozen in this way.
I think the only way things are frozen is I don't expect them to hire those assistant GM positions, or I'm curious, like the hiring of upper level, upper management and building out the front office and all of that. I do think that's probably going to be, I don't want to say frozen, but at least complicated. Whereas I think player acquisitions, it just continues to be Pelinka and company doing what they've been doing.
So for me, Pete, the framing of our conversation about how these are two ideas colliding to me. It was the Walter ownership group and Rob Pelinka, especially because these have been plans that you've talked about both on and off the pod for the pinpointing of this specific summer for years before Mark Walter was the majority owner. The Lakers had pinpointed this summer as being one where they were going to remake the roster and sort of build around a bigger idea. And then when they got Luka, I think that that even crystallized what it was going to be even more. That idea to me is colliding with all of the change that the Lakers are currently dealing with the transition of power with the ownership group transferring to Iger and Kushner? And what is their vision for the organization? And where do they want to invest? What is their ideal scenario for the operations of the team? And those are open questions that we actually don't have much information on at all. I think that we projected some of that stuff on to Mark Walter based off of our history of knowing what he did with the Dodgers, but we actually never heard him talk about this either. We were just like, hey, we envision it being this. And then over the past 6 months, towards the end of the season and then going into the offseason, we did start to hear more about what the sort of Dodgerification of the Lakers was going to be. And we started to hear about more of those investments with the training center and everything else. And so for me, Pete, I'm glad we're talking about this specific idea of the current realities of the organization and the transition from a Walter-led ownership group to an Iger-Kushner one. How will that impact team building? How will that impact how the organization's being run? And how will that impact the on-court product? Because I think these are important conversations to have, particularly, again, when being contextualized by the importance internally that was being placed on this summer and coming out of this summer with, I think, your vision, what you always said was like getting on the path to being a contender again. And what are you learning? And I think if any of that learning is put on pause, or we are in some way jeopardizing the amount of information we can get out of this year, I think that's a problem for the Lakers,
huge
both
problem
in the short term, but particularly in the long term. So let's take our break here, Pete. And when we come back, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
I'm Hannah. I've lost 75 pounds in 20 months with GLP-1s, plus diet and exercise. On Row, I've gone from struggling to run a mile to running farther every day. You can access FDA-approved GLP-1s online. Get the support you need to reach your weight loss goals. Go to row.co/weight to see if you qualify. I'm a paid Row partner. 20% average weight loss in 1 year in non-diabetics with obesity or overweight with a weight-related medical condition versus 3.1% in placebo arm. Rx only. To stay informed about serious side effects, go to row.co/safety.
A lot has changed since Bob's Discount Furniture opened its first store 35 years ago. Car phones have become cell phones, grunge band hits have become oldies, and you can order furniture online. But what hasn't changed is the way they do business, aka the Bob's way. Doing things the Bob's way means that when I shop at Bob's, I know I'll find the latest top-rated styles like the Aspen sofa for just $399, bedrooms with storage and charging, Consumer Reports recommended mattresses, real marble dining sets, and more. All at 90s-era prices. There's even no money down financing and lightning-fast shipping, so you aren't stuck waiting months for your furniture to arrive. Plus, Bob's still makes furniture shopping fun with friendly associates and cafes full of free treats and ice cream. Want to see for yourself? Stop into your local Bob's store this Labor Day weekend to party it up like it's 1991 and celebrate 35 years of doing things the Bob's way.
Imagine you're watching the game at a buddy's house when you get a call that someone tried to break into yours. In a second, everything can change. That's why there's ADT. No one wants to feel unsafe in their own home. ADT security systems help keep your home safe with 24/7 monitoring. The ADT Plus app keeps you in control the whole time. ADT's network is built for those game time moments. They have the most company operated monitoring centers in the industry. Don't leave your home wide open during an emergency. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP.
Even prior to the Mark Walter sale to Kushner and Iger, I was thinking that this has been one of the more disorienting summers in Lakers history. It's an era change. Whenever you go from being a LeBron team to not being a LeBron team, that in and of itself, it's always, there's a level of newness to that, that as Lakers analysts, as people who talk about the team all of the time, I felt like so much of the foundation was in place in terms of, we knew what they were going to be on some level. And obviously, Luka had come in and has been the best player on the team since he's gotten here. But having LeBron and a lot of what comes with that, and several players who'd been here for a bit between Austin and Rui, it was Jackson's third year with the team. There was some level of, we know what this team is, even if it's got a few new pieces. But now, between that and just the biggest roster overhaul on purpose, like you said in the first segment, along with a completely new direction in terms of the ownership and how does that impact the front office and all of that, I both am not sure what this team is, but I know that it's got to be on that track toward a championship. My tangible objective for this year is for it to be the year before the year. I want them to at least be knocking on the door of that tier one. I don't want teams like San Antonio or OKC and then the Knicks, the run that they went on. I don't want them to seem like they're so far away that it's difficult to comprehend, right? And so I kick that idea to you, man. What's your expectation and how do you make sense out of just this very disorienting time?
Before that, Pete, can I ask you a question? Something stood out to me in what you just said with the new direction or different direction of the new ownership group. Do you think that this transition from a Walter-led group and what his vision for achievement looks like is drastically different than what an Iger Kushner? I would imagine the North Star for the organization is not changing. I don't think it changed from the Buss family to Mark Walter, and I don't necessarily think it's changing from Walter to Kushner and Iger, but obviously the machinations internally for what course they chart within chasing that North Star is going to be different. But do you think it's different? How does that impact your view of what the team is going to do?
No, I think the goals are the same, right? But I think the how is significant enough to, it's sort of like you got your whole crew together, you got your whole army ready to go on march, and now it's like, oh, we've got a new commander out of nowhere. That, of course, that's going to change. And this front office in particular, speaking to the point that, like, the first I heard about the summer of 26 was late in 2023. This is a group of people that thinks very much in advance, but part of how they think and how they strategize is informed by the directives of what the people that they work for are. And on some level, that's not going to change at all, of course, in that they want to be competitive, they want to be champions. But within the details of that, I think it's inevitable that there's going to be differences. So it's more the uncertainty of the how rather than the ultimate goal being any different than it's always been.
I'm glad you clarified that because, yes, getting your marching orders potentially from Bob Iger. And again, I think some of this will truly come down to the Jeannie Buss aspect of this. And this is where the Buss family squabbles actually do matter. If she's able to maintain her ownership stake and her governorship, and she can sort of ingratiate herself to Iger and Kushner in the way that she had already had a pre-established relationship with Mark Walter, then I think that there's something to be said about Rob Pelinka and the sort of reporting line staying the same to a certain degree. Jeannie hired Rob, Jeannie's still here, and the sort of vision of the team remains unchanged in that specific way, even if Iger and Kushner have different ways of doing things. In getting to your question to me about expectations, I have similar expectations to you. The Lakers cannot afford to lose ground to two teams who are able to rapidly ascend in the ways that they already are. And so this is the ultimate challenge to the Lakers, I think, for this upcoming season, and was always going to be the case, is that Oklahoma City, even though they lost this past season, they were the defending champion. And even though they've taken sort of a step back in terms of some of the personnel that they lost with some of their role players, their three best players are all in their prime or approaching their prime. You expect these guys to get better and to continue on a pathway of improvement. The Spurs took a massive leap, but I think we'd all be silly to think that they're incapable of making another massive leap this upcoming season, right? Which is kind of scary for the rest of the league. The Lakers need to be able to make their own leap, but they need to be able to do that with a brand new roster in place. The growth of the team and of the players, the product on the court, needs to run on a parallel track to a transition within an ownership group. And those two things need to have connective lines like a railroad track going side by side, but one track needs to be able to be in some ways not impacted by whatever sort of changeover in power or decision-making structure that might exist on the other track. And that's an interesting proposition to me that I'm not entirely clear how that's going to work. I talk a lot about, in my general life, compartmentalization, like being able to compartmentalize X from Y, like this other thing is happening in my personal life. What am I going to do in my professional life? This is what's happening in my professional life. How's that going to impact the pod and all of this other stuff? And I think we all do this on a daily basis. The players on the court are going to need to be able to compartmentalize. The front office is going to need to have to compartmentalize and be able to operate and function and build the best team possible and set the course for success without being too caught up in whatever's happening with the Buss family or whatever's happening with the Walter transition to power to Iger and Kushner.
I think that compartmentalizing is going to be more complicated for the front office than it's going to be for J.J. Redick and his coaching staff or the players. Am I being naive in this in that I don't think a whole lot of this lands on the players that are currently on the team? I don't think a lot of this lands on Redick's doorstep. I think it complicates Pelinka's position and that level of management and above and around that. But in terms of the guys that are going out to Slovenia in a day or two and that'll be hitting the court and Redick for his plan for this year's team, am I being naive in thinking this, it's not just lip service, it's kind of business as usual for all of them?
I think that you're mostly right for the players on the court. I think that JJ and Rob have seemingly a good relationship and a close relationship. Mm-hmm. And whatever stresses Rob is feeling, I do wonder how that might impact JJ and the staff. This is where I think Rob's background as an agent, too, can sort of cut both ways. I saw a ton of clips last season, Pete, of games immediately ending and Luka Doncic walking into the tunnel and the first person he's being greeted by is Rob Pelinka. Mm-hmm. Right? And Rob is a very, sorry, I don't want to say this definitively like I'm behind the scenes, but I do think his background as an agent translates to a certain amount of player interaction and ensuring that the players feel comfortable that where he's taking a more hands-on approach than maybe other GMs might be doing. I have no idea about that because I'm not an insider in this way, but seeing Rob like dapping up the players after the game or putting his arm around Luka and having a conversation with him as they all walk back to the locker room, to me, that's where those lines start to get blurred a little bit. And if Rob is under a certain amount of pressure or is feeling being pulled in multiple directions or there's side taking that's happening, I could see that starting to impact things potentially a little bit just from an osmosis sense of just like, oh, there are more stressors being felt in this environment than maybe there would be if there wasn't this uncertainty.
I think that's totally fair. To what degree that manifests itself, we'll see. But and to your point, we've got other data points about Pelinka. You know, from Luka and his camp have said that they've been in constant communication. And that was the same thing that was true with LeBron and company until they sort of lost that seat of power to Luka and company. And I think it boils down to if Rob Pelinka thinks you're pretty important to this whole operation, he's going to go above and beyond to make sure that you're at least communicated with. Now, can people feel that they are misled sometimes in that communication? I know that LeBron and AD had some feelings about how that went, but the point is that when Pelinka thinks that you're really important to the operation, he's going to over-communicate. And so I think that's certainly the case, but that's pretty removed from the actual basketball that hits the court. Like, I'm slightly concerned in terms of the moves and transactions that happen going forward, not that they won't continue to kind of go down the path that they're on, but there is uncertainty with that. But they did most of their work already, and so they're going to hit the road with and running with this team. And let's go to break here. I want to come back and talk about what that looks like.
The first few weeks back at school set the tone for the entire year. But with new teachers, schedules, and expectations, it can feel like a lot. If you're looking to help your child start strong and stay confident, I've been using IXL to make that transition so much easier. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, it adapts to each child's level and pace, making it easy to spot and close learning gaps in just a few minutes a day before those gaps can snowball. Plus, it's trusted nationwide. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL, and it's used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. It's an easy, cost-effective way to get kids back into a learning routine and walking into class feeling ready and reassured. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. Listeners can get an exclusive 20% off an IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLLearning.com/audio. Visit IXLLearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. T&Cs apply.
Latte for Keenan?
That's me.
Hey, you're...
Yeah.
Buying a car online on AutoTrader?
Really? But unlike other sites, you can start online, test drive with a local dealer, then finish online or at the dealership.
Really? Wait, are you...
Yep, it's Keenan.
Able to finish in person without starting the process over?
Really? Your info stays with you every step of the way.
Cool. Enjoy.
It's Keenan Thompson. Buy your car online on AutoTrader. Really?
One last question for you, Pete, in relation to the sort of hiring stuff that we had alluded to earlier in the pod and like open positions. Are all the scouting positions filled, right? We know that that assistant GM position has not yet been filled, but the sort of building out of like pro personnel scouting was something that you and I have been talking about for years, honestly, that to me, it was obvious that the Lakers had always done better at evaluating talent coming out of college than they did in terms of like evaluating talent from around the league. And like nothing stood out to me more than the year they made the massive Russ trade, right? Russ was a long time old, and I know that he was like a star level player, so that's a different type of acquisition. But even all of the players that they decided to surround Russ and LeBron and AD with, those are all pro personnel scouting decisions. To me, they highlighted a deficiency in thought process around like what would have been required from a skill set and mixing and matching of player archetypes around what that group needed. And I always thought that was the bigger failure, was like, no, man, you can't be like, oh, yeah, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to have DeAndre Jordan and Carmelo Anthony and Trevor Ariza. I remember when they signed Kent Bazemore, and I'm just like, bro, I don't think Kent Bazemore is going to work. I know he just came off his best season, but he got the ball a lot and was in a read and react movement system. He was involved, and we're going to ask him to stand in the corner, and I don't see it working. And then lo and behold, that's exactly what happened. And I didn't feel like a genius or anything. I just felt like that's an evaluation of like what he was doing on his old team and what he's going to be asked to do on his new team and whether or not it translates. And so I get that the players are going to be removed, but the team is still not yet fully built. And so how do you bridge that with like, is it going to impact this team's ability to be the best version of this team this season for the goals that you laid out about they've got to keep pace with the teams in front of them right now and look like they're on the verge of something? And that's going to require some of that front office stuff that if it's not all the way built out, is that where they get hampered some?
That's actually a great point. I think you've really zeroed in on exactly where it it can impact the on-court product this year is in that pro personnel scouting, in that if they're not hiring these assistant GMs, like, what was the purpose for hiring them in the first place? Was to get better at personnel and get better on the analytics front. Now, I think Rohan Ramadas kind of checks that box from the analytics standpoint, but the pro personnel one and the scouting department, that's very up in the air, is who is doing that. Now, I think they've gotten a lot better, the current group, in terms of not just adding brand names the way that they did in 2021-22 season. The list of players that you listed, it was all players that if you even casually followed the NBA, you're like, oh, I know that guy, and like Carmelo Anthony and Trevor Ariza, 3-and-D type of guy, right? Even though it was like just a shell of the player that he used to be, it was all very, and that was something that I think really afflicted the team in the first half of the decade. It has been sort of an attraction to brand name type of players. Even a Pat Bev is a brand name defensive player, you know. They didn't get as many of those. Well, we got Alex Caruso off of OKC's G League team and sort of those unearthed type of talents, with the exception of Austin. And so they're still kind of undermanned in that respect. And I do believe that on paper, to be able to win a title, you have to have some sort of value contracts on the books. You've got to have guys who outperform what they're currently making just to add up to be a good enough team to actually contend to win it all. And that's very difficult to do via free agency. So there's a reason you pay Quentin Grimes and Mamu and all those dudes what they got, because they're in competition with everybody else. So you got to find that somewhere. But part of that is having good pro personnel people and being able to be like, no, that guy right there, we could sign him for a vet min, or he's a young player that was really good in the G League, the Arthur Kaluma type that we hope he develops into. And then all of a sudden you've got yourself a real player at cheap. Like, Lakers, I don't think they can add up their talent and get all the way to championship contention without that. How are you going to do that without filling out these positions?
This is interesting to me, Pete, because I had an article earlier this summer about the approach the Lakers took this offseason to roster building, and how it was a huge shift from the brand name acquisitions. And it was, to me, way more on a reliance of pro personnel scouting rather than looking at second draft style guys. So the line of demarcation that I would have made like earlier in the decade, when we were talking about like the Pat Bev, Trevor Ariza, Carmelo Anthony, DeAndre Jordan sort of group, was the one player that hit that season was Malik Monk, actually. And he was sort of a second draft candidate guy. He was a dude with pedigree. And this was the other approach that the Lakers took from a pro personnel scouting perspective. It was actually, who were the guys we liked in the draft who were coming off of a contract, or who we think are maybe undervalued or were not utilized correctly? And can we snatch those guys up and give them a second look? And the Lakers have done this historically, some to great success, like we said with Malik Monk, and some of it not much success. I remember the Wesley Johnson experiment, for example. And so these things can ebb and flow. But the Lakers, to your point, Pete, they went after Mamu and Quentin Grimes and even the Walker Kessler acquisition. To me, these were about like pro personnel stuff. And then for the sort of value over contract, there's no metric for this, right? But to me, this is where can one of Tybull or Zaire Williams hit, for example? From the veteran perspective, that's where you're actually looking. And if those guys can overperform their deals, that's where you're going to continue to get it. One of the things that I think where the pro personnel stuff is going to matter is in evaluating your current team as this roster gets more time together throughout the season. And maybe January or February comes around and you're just like, man, we really thought this was going to work, but it's looking like maybe we need to pivot here.
Great point.
That might be too early, but if you actually do think that, do you have all of the mechanisms in place to be able to properly evaluate all of that and then make the pivot and acquire the different sort of player that is going to boost you, or to actually look around the league and say, well, no, we're actually going well, but what's the one or two pieces that we need that we think is going to supplement this group so that they can even be better during the second half of the season in order to propel the team forward? And That's where I'm wondering how the on-court stuff can be impacted in ways where it's just like, okay, well, you're talking about a team that's already almost completely built, but what about the tweaks that need to happen in order to move it forward? That's where I'm just like, okay, do they have all of that infrastructure in place? And it seems like they don't. And if that stuff is on sort of hold, as everything shakes itself out, that's where I'd be worried about, like, oh man, well, they've got an opportunity here, but are they able to capitalize on that opportunity if they're not fully formed yet from a front office perspective?
This is a great point, and I think it speaks to the idea that the longer this drags out, the more it does have the ability to impact just sort of a, well, what's our direction at the trade deadline? Because they did the bulk of their work over the course of this summer, but they're not done. And I'm not just talking about Jonathan Kuminga or whoever the other forward is going to be. They've got moves to, that they're going to need to make between now and the championship version of the team. Where is Bob Iger and company on board with it? Is that the direction that they want to go in? All of those questions, along with just the staffing ideas of these are the people that are going to help you identify the best moves that can be made, because these are going to be fringe moves and they're going to be with like expiring contracts and things like that, that are not premium assets that any dummy can make a trade if you've got the picks that, say, OKC has, right? And you could just throw volume at it. Lakers are going to have to be super efficient in how they do things.
One of the things that I was thinking about too, Pete, is you talk about a fringe move. I remember when the Lakers made a trade with the Charlotte Bobcats back in the day, and they traded for Adam Morrison and Shannon Brown. And everyone thought the trade was for Adam Morrison, but in reality, the trade was actually for Shannon Brown. And Brown was not this massively influential role player who was out there burying clutch three-pointers like Derek Fisher and was this starting lineup mainstay where it's just like, oh, that's a big move. No, Shannon Brown was the Lakers' eighth player, right? He was a good bench guard, but he filled a real need with athleticism and transition play. He could defend a little bit. He had a little bit of like cutting ability, and he just fit in to what the Lakers were doing. And he ended up being a contributor on a team that wins a championship.
And think about how narrow the margins are in this sort of thing of like, that second title that they won was a game seven. They barely eked that out. Even watching the finals this year in a 5-game series with the Knicks and Spurs, how many of those games came down to a couple of possessions? So we talk about winning on the margins. That's oftentimes the difference between a conference championship or a title or second round versus conference championship. So it's small, but it's not.
And so you need to be well positioned in all of these ways. I don't want this conversation to come off as doom and gloom by any means, but I am trying to draw the connective lines, right, between what is happening with the team right now in what no one expected to be a time of transition. We were expecting this to be year two of the Mark Walter era, where they're really starting to get boots on the ground and really start to understand and take shape. They did their year of evaluation, and now this was going to be their year of change and really implementing the things that they learned. And now some of that is reset, Pete, and the degree to which that reset impacts basketball operations, I think, is an open question. It doesn't need to be negative, right? We talked about this some in our pod about Iger, but he's been around the league, at least from an entertainment perspective, a long time. We talked about his Rolodex, which our producer GD was sort of laughing at us. It's like, do young people even know what a Rolodex is?
Old
like,
man,
we should have used like a contacts app on their phone, right? Anyways, the idea of who you know and who you get input from, that very well could be even better under Iger than it would have been under Mark Walter, right? His ownership groups have been in baseball rather than Iger, who has been a league partner with the NBA for several years and has clearly made inroads by knowing NBA people. He may have really good ideas. He may have connections to really good people who are going to help bolster things in a positive direction rather than in ways where it looks like, oh, well, this isn't what I expected and it's doom and gloom. So I don't want to make it seem like this can only go in one direction and that there's only potential negative pitfalls that are out there for us to navigate. That said, it is an uncertainty And we are just trying to talk through some of this. And this is an important year for the Lakers. And all of these things need to be going in the same direction, because any sort of dragging back is really, really bad in a conference where the top two teams are young and hungry and just getting better.
This is such a great point that it doesn't have to be a bad thing, right? It's uncertain, and that, you know, produces anxiety and all of that. But one thing I am certain about is I'm glad that the Lakers are out of the Mark Walter business, like you wrote about. Is whatever route this goes, I'm glad it's not that. I'm glad it's not a, hey, can we get out of our TV deals? Because this is going to put more money in Walter's pocket. He's backed into such a corner, it couldn't have anything but negative consequences, in my view, on the Lakers. And I think that I'll take the great unknown here rather than that route. So, all right, we're going to wrap up here. Be back tomorrow. Have a special guest joining us. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn his double team. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
Yes, Magic got it. Magic fires again. And the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound is Lottie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way. Done.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block. An NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one,
miss it.
Unbelievable. For the victory. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant. Yes. And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.